Welcome to The Rock Church's newest podcast series, Coffee Conversations. In this series, members of The Rock staff will be sitting down together in one of our C3 coffee bars to discuss, in further detail, the sermon from that week. Today, you'll hear Josh Finkley, Clay Finkley, and Dylan Thompson discuss week 4 of Grace. Enjoy!
Hey guys, what is up? Welcome to our coffee conversation. We're here at our coastal campus, and as you may have already noticed, we didn't have any worship tonight, and that's just because normally we would do a service on a Sunday evening, but we're not in a normal time, so we're just trying some different things and setting this up more as just a conversational aspect of service. I don't even know where I'm going. Sometimes I start a sentence and I don't know where I'm going.
You know what? That's pretty much my entire life, never knowing where my sentences
exactly,
are going.
So. Exactly. No, but we're gonna dive really into the message from this weekend and just unpack that even a little bit more. So I'm here with Josh and Clay. You guys want to introduce yourselves a little more if you want? Or?
My name is Joshua Hyatt Finkley. I was born in Indianapolis, Indiana.
What a beautiful Irish name.
My name is Clay Hyatt Finkley, and I was born in Marion, Indiana, I think.
I have no clue where I was.
No. Not Marion. I got that mixed up. New Albany.
Okay. It's not Albany. It's not Albany. You're not like Amanda from the Northeast in Albany. You're from Indiana.
I was a baby. What am I supposed to do?
You're born in New Albany, Indiana.
New Albany.
Dylan, where were you born?
I was born right here in Conway, South Carolina, about 60 seconds that way.
Really?
Yeah,
you're
Conway
born
Hospital.
In the Independent Republic
Independent
of
Republic
County.
Of Horry County. Yeah, when I say I'm a local, I mean it. You born, bred,
local.
Raised.
Hey, I'm a local. Finkley's just right up the road.
Sure.
Well, claim it, baby.
If that helps you sleep
claim
well.
Claim it. All right? I say y'all. I've been told I got an accent. All right? If you believe I have an accent, hit that like button. I don't know what you do if you don't believe I do. So
if you don't think Josh does, hit the little laughing reaction. Let's do
ooh,
that.
Yeah, there you go. We want to see where that's at. So
yeah, that's good.
All right. So yeah, you're part of Coffee Conversations. We're here at our coastal campus, which is a coffee bar, so we do something like this weekly. We've just thrown it on Sunday nights, as Dylan has said, and you know. We're in an abnormal season. Everybody knows that. We are looking forward to, there are some aspects of, I don't even want to call it normality, but there are some things in our church that we are going to be able to do some live experiences here shortly in some form or fashion. But
so ready.
Joining online is always a great option. Joining physically for those of you who want to, when you're able to, that's another option. But both options are always available. All right. So now this weekend at church, we continued our Grace series. We talked about eating with regrets, which I know sounds weird, right? We've eaten with sinners, we've eaten with friends, we've eaten with enemies. Eating with regrets, it's like, wait, that's not a person. What it really means is eating with yourself.
Yep.
Because I do believe there's a lot of times that we need grace. And probably the hardest person for us to give grace to is ourselves.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I really hit that this weekend. But as we dive into this topic, I just want to know, is there ever been a time you can remember where you were sitting at breakfast table, lunch table, dinner table, and you had regrets over maybe something you had done or just something happened and you all of a sudden you find yourself eating with regrets at the table?
Yeah, I mean, so you know you have Watergate, you have Spygate. Let me tell you about Cookiegate real quick.
Cookiegate, okay.
Yeah, Cookiegate real quick. So it was 2014. Me and Mackenzie, one of my younger sisters, she's, you know, Fish and I are senior of high school. You guys are living in Champaign. So, we were just living in a couple different places at that time just due to ministry callings and all that. And I remember one night trying to be like, I'm going to be really nice for my younger sister. So, like, you know, she was out at a play practice or something. So, like, I ended up making dinner and making cookies and all that sorts of stuff. And I was like, okay, like, this is going to be a good night for her just as a way to say, hey, thanks for all you're doing around the house, whatever. And made dinner. Dinner was going great. And then I proceeded to bring the cookies out to her. And I said, man, cookies are harder to make than I thought they were to make. And she's like, what do you mean? I was like, oh, you know, like I really thought these cookies would harden a lot faster than they did. Like they just took forever. And she's like, how long did you cook those cookies for?
I know where this is going.
I do not know where this is going.
I cooked
good
cookies for 28 minutes because I thought they were supposed to harden inside of the oven, not when you take them out.
They harden out of the oven.
Yeah, I didn't know that, man. So then I proceeded to give her a cookie, and she literally, it was like a frisbee, man. Like it was
like
a
hockey puck.
It could put a hole through the drywall. It was a bad spot.
It's the thought that counts, though. At least you made cookies for your little sister.
I mean, I was pretty disappointed, though. Like, I was really looking forward to cookies. 28 minutes, though. Bad idea.
Yeah, that's a bad idea. There's a regret. Dylan, you got any?
Dude, I'm going to be honest. I've been trying to. You prompted us with this question a little before we started. And, you know, I'm an Enneagram 8, so I don't process mistakes very well. In fact, most of the time I just bury them and hope that they just die there. So sometimes it's really hard for me to dig those back up. So I cannot think of a time that maybe I sat around a dinner table. I'm sure if you go to my wife and ask her, she'll be happy to tell you.
Or I
many
bet I
times.
Could go to your mom.
You go to my mom, my wife, really anybody that has sat down at a table with me and just ask, hey, what's something stupid he's done around a dinner table? And you'll get some answers.
Yeah, I get that. You know, I told a story this weekend about a regret I had. There's another regret I had that I didn't tell was I was in sixth grade and we were sitting in the cafeteria. And back then, they would give us these brownies. I still remember the whole meal that we had pizza, we had brownies, and we had stewed tomatoes. I don't know why stewed whole tomatoes. It was gross.
That was a strong start to the school lunch. Yeah. Bad finish.
Bad finish. Bad finish. Well, the brownies had that powdered sugar on top. So what we would always do is when your friend wasn't watching, you'd turn and look at him and go, you know what I mean? And powder them, you know what I mean? Well, that started the food fight that day, and then a couple other little things came flying, and eventually, I don't know how, I don't know where from, but a stewed tomato flew and landed on my plate. It didn't just land on my plate. It landed perfectly on my spoon, and the handle of my spoon was hanging over the edge. So it was like a catapult launching.
Just a perfect catapult.
It was a perfect, and I was like, well, bam, and I hit it.
And then
and it went flying through the air and hit the janitor.
Ooh, that's the one person you can't hit in a food
fight.
That's
the one person you can't hit in a food fight.
I always thought food fights were going to be a bigger problem than they actually were.
Yeah, though. No?
Remember, this is about 1979, 1980, okay? So
peak food fight season.
Yeah,
that
you
was.
Know, this is. So anyway, I regretted that decision because for the rest of the school year, while everybody else went out to recess, I had to clean the cafeteria before I could go play. So strong regrets there. And I bring all that up because we're dealing with a story about a guy who had to deal with some regrets as he was eating with Jesus. It came right to his face. And Dylan, for those who might not know the story, would you just kind of just tell us the story? I know it's John 21, but go ahead and just lay that out for people so they catch up to speed.
Yeah, so this is after Jesus' death, burial, resurrection. He's actually appeared to many people at this point, but this is another account of him appearing to his disciples. And this one's a little different because this is really a conversation between him and Peter. Essentially, his disciples go back to what they knew. They're out on the Sea of Galilee fishing, and they don't catch anything. Says they were fishing all night, and the next morning, you know, they're starting to come back in, probably really early morning, maybe right at daybreak. They see a man standing on the shore who kind of yells at him, asks if they caught anything, and they say no, and he tells them, well, throw your net on the right side of the boat, and you'll catch something. And I mean, at this point, I feel like they've seen weirder things than that, so they're probably just like, yeah, whatever, we'll do it. But they do it, and it says that they caught so many fish that they had trouble lifting it into the boat. Mm-hmm. And they all kind of quickly realized that's Jesus. Even though they couldn't make out who he was, they knew just based on character that's Jesus. So Peter jumps out of the boat, swims to shore. The rest of the disciples follow suit in the boat, towing the fish. They get to shore, and Jesus kind of prepares them breakfast, and then he has a conversation with Peter kind of separately where earlier in the Gospels, Peter had denied Jesus three times. Well, this time Jesus asks him three times, do you love me? And he kind of restores Peter in this way.
So. Yeah, yeah. And there's so many things about this story that I love. One, it's breakfast. I don't know if we have another breakfast story in the Gospels? I don't think we do.
I don't think we do either. That's a great question.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's one of those things in preparation for this weekend I was looking to, and I couldn't find one. And I think breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
Absolutely.
Like, I do not go.
I was
breakfast.
Watching Parks and Rec last night, and Leslie Knope looks at Ron Swanson and says, "Why does anybody eat anything but breakfast food?" And Ron looked at her and said, "Because people are idiots." Like, breakfast food is the goat. It's the best.
A Waffle House waffle is.
They're good. If you put some sausage. You're probably struggling because I know you love Waffle House and they're
I do.
Like,
they're
closed.
Not. You know things are bad when Waffle House is closed.
You zombie apocalypse. I mean, when Waffle House closes, I probably shouldn't have said that. Anyway, let's move back into the text. Okay, so you're exactly right. So they meet for breakfast. Jesus says, "Hey, let's come up." And he has this conversation with Peter. Let's start with this. This weekend I talked about this idea that these guys were called by grace and changed by grace. I just want to hear your guys' take on where you see grace in this story, about how these guys are called to grace, called by grace, and how they were changed by grace. So just kind of give me your take and teach us a little bit more from this story about grace and about Jesus calling them and all that we find in this part of the story.
I love the aspect of what happens with Peter at the beginning of the story. You have this guy who's just recently rejected Jesus three times. He's feeling terrible about himself. He's feeling awful, like just filled with shame and guilt and regret and just dealing with all these negative emotions. And I think that's something we can all feel as well. Like, we all have had that moment in our life where we made a mistake and we just feel that shame and guilt coming over us. And what Peter wanted to do and what we want to do so often is go into isolation. And Peter, you know, he just says, "Hey, I'm going to go fishing. Like, hey, I'm going to go by myself. I'm going to go back to what I know. I'm going to go back to this area. And I'm just going to go be by myself." And what I love about the story is that some of the other disciples were standing there with him and said, "Okay, we're coming with you." Mm-hmm. And I thought that was such a key portion to this story. Just like, when we want to be isolated is often after mistakes and guilt, and we think that's what we really want, mm-hmm. but it's not what we need at all. We need to be in some sort of community, and they went and they fished, and you talked about them fishing. What was hilarious about this story is that it says they didn't catch anything at all that night. Can you imagine how annoyed you are by Peter, former professional fisherman, that's what he did for a living, is angry, upset, filled with shame and guilt, is trying to go just get out of the out of his mind. You're a big fisher.
Well, I don't know if I'd call myself a big fisherman. I enjoy fishing.
You enjoy fishing.
But when it comes to people who are locals, I am not a big fisherman.
You are
fisherman.
Not. But you do enjoy fishing, yes. Right? So he's got all this frustration and then still catches nothing, which has to make it even worse, right? Mm-hmm. But then they see Jesus and they see that Jesus is there. And just like the disciples wouldn't abandon Peter, Jesus wasn't abandoning them either. And there's just something strong there, mm-hmm. about the community aspect of everything that we do inside of this guilt and shame and this regret life. And, you know, it's so important for us to realize that no matter what your shame or guilt is, or your regret, or someone that you know's regret, and you can't abandon them. You can't leave them on there alone. They need, or you need, people around you.
Mm-hmm. Man, there's so much good stuff in this story.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things about this specific account is that it's a mirror of Jesus's original calling of them, mm-hmm. and then it's a mirror of Peter's denial. Mm-hmm. So you've got two mirrors in the story. The first being that it says they went to the Sea of Galilee to fish. Now, this is not uncommon. That's the prominent fishing spot, right? But it's what happens here that mirrors. Like in Mark 1 and I think in Luke 5, we get an account that the disciples were on the Sea of Galilee, specifically Peter and Andrew, and Jesus appears to them by the Sea of Galilee while they're fishing, and he mm-hmm. says, "Follow me." Here in John 21, we have the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. Jesus shows up to Peter and on the Sea of Galilee while they're fishing, and he later says to him, "Follow me." So there's a really cool, like, scriptural narrative thing that's going on here that I think embodies that idea of being called by grace, right? Yeah. That, like, even though all the disciples fled when Jesus was arrested, they didn't stick around. They weren't there for him while he was dying, right? Peter denied him. Jesus still goes back to the original spot he called him and reaffirms that calling.
That's
right.
Yeah.
The second is that Peter denied Jesus just days earlier to this. And I love seeing what John does here, because back in John 18, there's a really weird detail when Jesus is on trial. This servant girl asks Peter, "Hey, you're one of his disciples, right?" And Peter says, "No, I don't know the guy." And John writes this weird kind of, it seems out of place detail that just says, "It was cold, and the servants and officials stood around a fire they had made to keep them warm." Mm-hmm. Peter also was standing by them warming himself. And then it goes on and continues, and it just seems so out of place until you get here. Where in John 21, verse 9, it says, when they landed, they saw a fire burning coals, and there were fish on it and some bread.
Yeah.
And you start to see, okay, Jesus is not just, he's not just ready to have a conversation. He's ready to reset the scene for them. And in the same identical environment that Peter denied him three times, he was asked, "Do you know him?" And he said, "No, I don't know him," three times. He asked him three times, "Do you love me?"
Right.
And gives him a chance to have redemption there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it brings that grace into it from that side. And when I hear both of y'all's comments, I just see the grace at work, you know. First is just the grace inside the men. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if you think about it, and we have to speculate a little bit, okay? Sometimes I call it reading between the lines. Were the men going with Peter because they didn't want Peter to be alone? Or were the men going with Peter because they still looked at Peter like a leader and was like, "Well, if you're going there, then I'm following along with you"? Either way, we see grace in the situation, right? Because if it's the men trying to jump in with Peter because they know he shouldn't be alone right now, which is a great biblical principle, that they're saying, "We want to give Peter grace. We know that we all screwed up, but he did it really bad. But we're going to give grace." Or the flip side, Peter wanting to be alone, going to do this, and these guys are like, "Man, we don't know where else to go right now, so we're coming along with you." He's giving. So we see grace in that whole situation of people coming together and then going and sitting at the beach and eating. We see grace in your what you're bringing up, Dylan, from the Jesus side. You know what I mean? That Jesus is willing to say, "Peter, do you love me? Like, I want to give you a challenge right now." And I love how you said it, just a mirror effect there of the original calling, the mirror effect of the campfire. Those are just some great points. Here's a question that I'm just curious about. What do you think Peter's emotions were like in the midst of this? What we could guess is probably, what do you think his emotions were like in the midst of this conversation that Jesus was having with him? Because it was obviously a direct conversation with him. I don't know if the other guys could fully hear it or if they could hear it, but either way, it's a one-on-one conversation.
Yeah. I have to imagine there was an incredible amount of frustration and worry inside of that conversation and in his emotional state. I mean, if you look at the start of when Jesus starts talking to Peter, he starts by calling him Simon, his old name, and it's almost like a reference back. Hey, are you wanting to go back to your old life? Is this what you're really wanting? Like, do you want to go back to being the fisherman? Do you want to go back to being Simon, or do you want to be Peter, the guy I've called to go and do something? So you have this flip of a name. Is this who you really want to be? And then he asked, "Do you love me?" three different times. You mentioned that and the mirror of that, which is important, and I love that mirror effect. But what's also interesting is that it's like, "Do you love me? Because your actions sure didn't look like it." Mm-hmm. "Do you love me? Are you sure?" It's almost like a parent asking a kid the same question several times in a row. It's like, "I'm going to get to the real answer by asking." Like, because, you know, you can say, "Hey, did you do this?" "No." "Did you do this?" "No." "Did you do this?" "Yes." Like, there comes a break point, right? Mm-hmm. Thankfully, there wasn't a break point where he ended up flipping it around, but he says, "Do you love me?" three times, and it's really interesting the words that were used. I'm gonna hit that Greek real quick because I read it in my study Bible. Because
I'm ready. I'm ready for some Greek.
So the first two times Jesus asked, "Do you love me?" The word for love was agape, which is a very divine, very, very full type of love. So he says, "Do you love me?" using the word agape. "Do you love me?" using the word agape. Then the third time he asked him, he asked, "Do you love me?" But he used the word phileo, which is more of a brotherly relationship. Philadelphia, shout out Amanda producing right now.
That's right.
The city of brotherly love.
Yeah.
And I thought that was super interesting. Like, hey, do you love me? Like, do you love me? Do you care about me as your God, as your King, as the one that you're putting everything in? But do you also love me, and do you want to be around me? Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important question because it takes the issue and then applies it into the relationship. It's mm-hmm. that slight thing where it's, and there's a lot of us that we say we love God, we say we love him, and then our actions don't show it, and then we don't treat God like we really have this brotherly, affectionate, we want to be there for him type of love. Mm-hmm. And that's what he was saying right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we start wondering, well, what was Peter's feeling during this? I mean, verse 17 says that Peter was hurt. When it literally says, then Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" Mm-hmm. I think the fact that it takes him three times to get it, you're kind of right. It's like a parent. Like, maybe Peter didn't realize what was really happening until Jesus hit that third, "Do you love me?" Mm-hmm. Maybe the first time he was like, "Yeah, of course. Like, you know that." Second time, he was like, "All right, why are you asking again?" The third time, though, he gets it. Something clicks, and he's like, "Oh, okay." Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about the elephant in the room, you know, because Peter had been so zealous just days before, saying, "No, I would die for you." And Jesus looks at him and says, "No, you're going to deny me three times tonight."
Yeah,
they haven't talked since that, mm-hmm. really, or they haven't talked about that since
they haven't
that,
talked
right?
about that. Exactly right.
So I think Peter very quickly realizes, like, when he hits that third, "Do you love me?" It's okay. Jesus is. This is a callback moment, right? Mm-hmm. This is him bringing up my past mistake.
Yeah.
But what I love is that Jesus doesn't just bring it up and be like, "Hey, you remember that you messed up?"
That's right.
Right? In fact, I'm going back to what I talked about with the mirroring effect. The first time they had this conversation at this exact location, Jesus said, "I'm going to make you a fisher of men." Mm-hmm. This time they have that same conversation, and he says, "I'm going to make you a shepherd of sheep."
Yeah.
Which I think is grace, because he doesn't just stop with mercy, like, "Hey, Peter, I know you messed up, I forgive you." He gives grace, and he's like, "I'm going to advance your title. I'm going to give you more authority. I'm going to give you more responsibility, mm-hmm. and you're going to do more for me than you ever thought you could do, even though you messed up."
Yeah, yeah. And that's, you know, a perfect segue, because of this idea of being commissioned for grace. You know what I mean? That okay, I get you. And it's almost in that moment he goes from regret to repentance again. You know what I mean? Of going, "Yes, I get it." And Jesus is like, "Yes, I see that you get it. And I want you to now live in a commissioned life," you know? And then going on so much so to tell him, "This is how you're going to die. Like, you're going to be challenged again to deny me. And you're not going to. You're going to stand firm. That Satan's not going to win this battle in your life." And he commissioned him. So he took him and said, "Now, forgive yourself. Let that regret go. Quit eating with it. It's gone now. Now we're going to move forward." So you spoke very well into that, Dylan. Clay, anything you would add into that? You know,
I can't imagine how Jesus did that. Knowing just if someone hurts me, if someone, you know, puts me in a bad spot, it's very hard for me to give them my trust to say, "Hey, yeah, you're going to be the rock of this whole thing that I've been setting up. Like, it's all yours." But that's what Jesus does for us. You know, mm-hmm. he knows that we make mistakes. He knows that we've messed up. But he still looks at us and says, "You know what? I trust them. Here's the plan. Here's your skill set. Go make it work. I believe
mm-hmm.
in you."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he sends him out. And I love how he tells him how he's going to die. You know what I mean? You're dressing yourself right now, but at some point when you're older, somebody's going to dress you, and they're going to lead you where you don't want to go. But you're going to stand strong. But then his last words is, "So follow me." Mm-hmm. So follow me. How do you see grace in that work? Go ahead.
The first words that Jesus ever says to Peter is "Follow me." Mm-hmm. The last words in this context from a God in the Gospels mm-hmm. is "Follow me." Mm-hmm. That's all life is about. There's ups and downs. There's good days. There's bad days. We're gonna mess up, but if we start by following Him, we end by following Him. Mm-hmm. Everything's good. Mm-hmm. That's how grace, and that's the purpose of grace, because mm-hmm. we would never make it to that end where we can continue to follow Him without that grace in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the key is followership, and we do make mistakes. So how do you tell somebody? How do you tell the high school students to listen right now, the college students to listen right now, the person who's been battling the sin habit, who's jumped back into a sin habit? How do you help them understand how to get past that regret and move towards the life that God is calling them to live in simply following again? Because like you said, we have ups and downs. But how do we quit eating with regret and move forward in following of Jesus?
I would say that if we did not have regrets and mistakes that we have made, then we are not ready to be used by Jesus. And let me explain. Mm-hmm. Jesus specializes in using broken people and broken things. Mm-hmm. If there were perfect people, there wouldn't be need for Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. But then if you, if me, if Clay, if anybody watching was without regret, without sin, without mistake, what example of the gospel is that? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Like Jesus goes to Peter and says, "Hey, I know you messed up big time, but it's because you messed up that I'm going to continue to build the church on you. Mm-hmm. It's because you messed up that I'm going to redeem you and do this, because you need my power. Mm-hmm. You need the Holy Spirit that I'm going to give you in order to accomplish the mission," right? It's nothing that we can do. Mm-hmm. It's what He can do through us.
That's right.
So I think if we understand, like, we can make mistakes. We can have regrets, right? Mm-hmm. It was never about the good things that we could offer in the first place. Mm-hmm. So why would it ever be about the bad things that could ruin it, right?
That's a good point.
Like it's the good Holy Spirit in us mm-hmm. that will accomplish the calling and the mission that Jesus puts in our lives and calls us to. Mm-hmm. And that takes the pressure off, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not a perfect person. Thank God it's not up to my ability to do any of this, right?
Yep.
Because if it was, man, I would fall flat on my face. Mm-hmm. But because it's not, I don't have to let that regret hang around like a weight of shame.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. It's good. It's a good word. Good word. So, well, hey, man, I hope you guys have enjoyed this as we talked about this idea of grace and eating with regret and then understanding that Jesus still wants to use you in spite of mistakes. So let it go, quit eating with it, and just start eating with Jesus. So with that in mind, Clay, let's go ahead and wrap up. I'll let you kind of send us out however you need to.
Yeah, just a few quick things. If you are listening to this conversation, you are saying, man, I really want to respond to Jesus. I want to get rid of this regret. I really want to have Him, you know, use me and take over my life and help me move past anything that I've been going on. Do us a favor. Text. It's not doing us a favor. It's doing yourself a favor by you responding to Jesus and text YES to 843-444-2144. And also, if you are new here, text that same number, 843-444-2144, the word CONNECT, and we would love to be connected with you. Guys, there's a great time for response right now. We'd love to help you take that next step, because just like Peter wasn't alone, we don't want you to be alone. And Jesus is there for you, and we are here for you as well. So anything that we can do, we'd love to help you, whether that's a response through texting YES or a response through connecting with us, just saying that you're new here and just getting connected that way. Guys, it's been a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to next week and the things that we're able to do next week. And I'm looking forward to gathering together again soon. My name's Clay. I was not born in Marion, Indiana, and I hope you have a great week.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you'd like to learn more about The Rock, you can visit us at rockc3.com or head over to your app store and search Rock C3 for our app. Have a great week.